Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hello and welcome to another episode of No Such Thing as a Fish, a weekly podcast coming to you from the QI offices in Covent Garden. My name is Dan Schreiber. I am sitting here with Anna Chazinski, James Harkin, and Alex Bell. And once again, we have gathered around the microphones with our four favorite facts from the last 7 days. And in no particular order, here we go. Starting with you, James.
My fact this week is that scientists at MIT have invented an artificial intelligence that can see into the future, but it can only tell 2 seconds into the future.
Totally useless.
What's it reported back?
It knew you were going to say that. So this is really cool. So what they did was they got this algorithm to watch TV shows like The Office and The Big Bang Theory. Okay, and it watched what people did when they met each other. So did you go in for a hug or a kiss or a handshake or a high five? And then when you showed them a picture of two people coming near each other, it could work out what they were going to do, whether they were going to high five, whether they were going to hug, whether they were going to kiss or whatever. So that's basically as far as this has gone so far. Still pretty good for an AI.
Yeah, and I'm surprised it was able to do this based on The Office and The Big Bang Theory, both of which are about totally socially inept people, who I wouldn't have thought give those correct cues.
Not the best source material to use for an AI.
Maybe it made the AI feel more comfortable watching something closer to their kind of robotic way. Yeah. So like, oh, okay, we're not so different, you and us humans.
Yeah.
And also, I think that is quite a useful thing, because how many times have you gone in for a hug to someone and they tried to high-five you and slap you in the face, or the kiss/slash handshake thing is pretty awkward at times.
Well, in the article it said that the AI could only get it right 43%
That's
of the time,
correct,
which I was reading wasn't very high, but then I realised I get it right about maybe 2% of the time. So
apparently normal humans get it right 71% of the time, but obviously that doesn't apply to you.
The thing is, Alex goes in for the kiss every single time.
And it will get better, won't it? Because it'll keep on watching.
It'll get better. And 43% of the time versus 71% of the time is not that bad, considering all they've done is got it to watch these two things.
Yeah.
Whereas most humans have had a lot of social interaction to get to where we are, which is still not that good.
The thing it might do in hospitals, if it gets really good, is anticipate a couple of seconds in advance whether someone, for instance, is about to fall over, like an old person on the way to the loo, and then swoop in and catch them.
Maybe they should show him lots of episodes of Miranda where she, where she falls down all the time.
Intermediate level, you can see it coming a mile off.
If it watched Miranda, it would try to save you every step you took.
Yeah, if you saw a Mr. Bean episode, it'd probably either explode or not let you out the house if it was a robot. Check this out. There's another AI robotic thing which plays scissors, paper, rock, and beats humans 100% of the time.
No, it doesn't.
100, it has 100%.
It breaks the rules, though. This makes me so angry, this machine.
It doesn't break the rules.
Yeah, it does. It waits to see what you're doing and then very quickly... Yeah.
No. No, that's not quite right, because it technically is doing that, but if you're a good game player as well, you would be looking at someone's hand to monitor where you think they're going to go. So it has a camera on it which is able to work out hand movements of people and what most likely hand shape they're about to take, but it can make a split-second decision so that it's at the same time.
It's a microsecond afterwards because it's seen the way your hand is moving, so it's decided a microsecond afterwards.
Is it not
afterwards.
Indistinguishable to humans?
Of course, but it is cheating.
That's not cheating. It is, because rock, paper, scissors is fundamentally a game of chance. It's like a coin toss. You're supposed to try and... You use it to decide things.
All it's doing is it's calling your tell. It's seeing the hand shape that you're bringing. That is not cheating. It is.
100% of the time becomes cheating because you can work out what's more or less likely.
100% mean it's cracked it. It knows how to win a game. It's done the impossible.
This is war.
Wait,
guys.
What does James think? What do you think?
Do you know how we should decide it?
It does look like you're about to high five Dan, but I'm not sure that that's what's going to happen.
So a robot was arrested recently.
Was it?
In September for taking part in a political rally. Seems a bit dodgy. This was in Russia. And this is actually a robot that I think might have come up before. You guys might have heard about. It's Promobot. And it's the one that escaped from its enclosure twice in, I think, about July this year.
Oh, yeah. But didn't we work out that was actually...
A stunt.
The clue's in the name, Promo. Yeah, the clue's in the name.
But then it did it again, and then the mechanics at Promobot said that they were trying to reprogram it to stop it escaping. They're just really sticking to their story.
Right.
But now it's taken part in a political rally because this robot supported parliamentary candidate Valery Kalachev. So it went to Moscow and started collecting people's views on politics, asking them what they thought.
Well, again, it escaped and did it by itself and was just going around interviewing people.
I believe it might have been programmed to do this part.
A dream to be a political correspondent.
After it was arrested, did it escape from prison?
It probably has done now, yeah. They did put handcuffs on it, apparently.
Did they?
They must have been like idiots, those policemen, handcuffing a robot.
That would have been a fun moment of an otherwise probably depressing, arresting situation.
I guess you're right. It's one of the highlights
your
of
day,
your career.
Honey? I had to like handcuff, you know, 25 people at a political protest, but I did handcuff a robot, and that actually really made me smile. This is just one bit of delight.
You're right.
Also in robot news, they have set this year in July a new dancing robot Guinness World Record.
Is it?
1,007 robots danced together for a minute, and that was what was needed. And so that it was synchronized. You can see a video online.
It's really cool.
It was in China, and it was at a Qingdao beer festival. So it was, I guess they were trying to just get headlines for it. But you can see all these tiny little robots, the kinds that you would buy in a shop that make sort of small movements. They're all doing a dance, and some fall over, so they're discounted, but they're still dancing while they're toppled
over. I wonder if it'd count. You know those like flower, and when you play music, they just kind of dance to the music. Do you remember them from the 90s?
Yes.
If you put 1,050 of those down, would that be able to technically beat the record?
I think they're effectively, that's the robots effectively that they used anyway. Yeah,
they were built to dance. They can't do anything else.
Yeah, so they put down 1,040, but they lost 33.
I have danced with a robot.
You have, haven't you?
You have. Asimov, right?
Asimov. We had Asimov, who was built by Honda, I think. And he came on QI, and during the warm-up, I did a little dance with him.
That's cool. He kind
of just follows your dance patterns, I think. I think that's how it worked.
I know a thing about Asimov, which a guest on our show from quite a few episodes ago, Levin Skyra, Belgian comedian and scientist, he was telling me that Asimov, they've programmed him to speak something like, I don't know, let's say 30 languages, it might be less, so that whenever they bring him over to different countries for conferences, he's able to do a lecture in their language. But he has one special setting for when he's in Italy, which is that they've programmed his arms to gesticulate
so that when
he's talking, it feels more, because that's how in Italy they feel more humanized than the robot standing still. That's quite cool, isn't it?
It's really good. Yeah, really good. I love it.
And he's also watched episodes of The Office, so he can do the David Brent dance.
Okay, here's something amazing about telling the future.
Okay.
There was a study done by a US intelligence group called the Good Judgment Project. And what they did is they got a load of people, about more than 2,000 people, and they started asking them things about world events, like, will Robert Mugabe still be the head of Zimbabwe in 2 years' time, or whatever, like a load of different things. And a lot of people made guesses, and eventually they siphoned off the top 2% who were doing the best, and then they put them in a separate group and compared them to everyone else, and found that that group was 4 times more accurate than anyone else. And they're saying that this proves that in humans there are, it's a thing called super forecasters, and these are people who are better than normal humans at foreseeing the future.
Wow. And are they all on Brighton Pier with a crystal ball charging people £10 to read their fortune?
It's weird. They all had different jobs. Like, one of the best ones was a pharmacist. They come from different walks of life and everything.
So we need to round these people up and take them all to the Met Office. They should all be the weather forecasters if they're definitely better.
Oh, right? My God, is that how you would use people who have this incredible
in
ability?
In my new world order.
We found a human who could see into the future. Take him to the Met Office immediately.
He's warning us about a massacre in... No, don't worry. Is it going to be cloudy?
And wow. what these guys are particularly good at is being open-minded, which you can kind of imagine. It means that they don't let their worldviews judge their predictions. Mm-hmm. And also they change their mind fast and often. So whenever...
What does that, to like correct their wrong prediction?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it is kind of like that. So they get something wrong one time, and a normal human might kind of stubbornly stick with the same similar kind of predictions. But then these people go, well, actually, you know, I've seen that that happens in the past now, so I'm going to change my mind this time.
Oh, okay. I was thinking more like football matches where they're like, okay, Manchester United is going to win this one, Liverpool score, and they're like, do you know what? I'm actually thinking that maybe.
Or I'm going to go for rock. No scissors.
Yeah. We need to put one of those people like against the machine.
Think about the last time you had a cancel subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Okay, it is time for fact number 2, and that is Alex.
My fact this week is that Big Ben is falling over.
We should get out of here.
We're not that close.
No, we're out of reach.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Okay. Well, technically the Elizabeth Tower, not Big Ben, obviously, don't write in. But when they built it, when they built the House of Parliament, they built it straight, obviously. And then I think as soon as the building settled, it was a little bit leany. And it's got leanier and leanier, as in it's been leaning over more and more away from the House of Parliament. And they've worked out that if it keeps falling over at the rate it is falling over, in about 4,000 years' time, it'll be leaning as much as the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Really? How many years?
4,000. So oh. It's not like super urgent.
So they are going to restore it now, aren't they? There's this big Houses of Parliament restoration going on, which is costing billions, and they're about to start working on that as well, the Elizabeth Tower. So anyone overseas who wants to see it in its pure unscaffolded form, you better get over quick, because beginning of January 2017, they're going to start scaffolding. Oh, yeah, and it's going to be scaffolded for 3 years. But it's going to take 6 months to just put the scaffolding up. Is that
really?
Nuts? Yeah, 6 months.
What, and they're going to push it back the right way?
No, I think they're doing basic restoration. I don't think they can do anything about that.
I don't think so, no. But it's causing cracks in the offices next to it, because it's basically pulling the wall away. So
really?
They're going to fill those up for a start.
The Big Ben Tower has a prison in it that they keep naughty MPs in.
Does it?
What are you talking about?
They have a prison room. If an MP breaches codes of conduct, they'll get put in there. And the last time it was used in 1880 was when Charles Bradlaugh, an atheist, refused to swear allegiance to Queen Victoria on the Bible.
Wow.
And he was kept in the prison room overnight.
And
that must
no
be
MP.
So noisy. Every hour, every quarter of an hour, it rings.
You're right.
You're right.
You're not going to get much sleep, are you? Yeah.
That'd be torture. That's like torture. It's like how they play Barney in Guantanamo. Yes.
So that'll be why MPs behave so well these days, is because they're terrified of the noise. It used to make a different sound, didn't it? When it was originally built, it chimed differently. So it was built in May 1859.
It didn't go bong.
No, so it was made, and the thing that crashes into the bell to make the bonging sounds worked for a few weeks and then immediately broke the bell, and the crack in the bell is still there from where it broke it. And so they had to realign it, didn't they? Which for some reason took them 3 or 4 years. And then they made it bang the bell on a different point of it. So we'll never hear the tone that Big Ben originally made.
Did you know that the Big Ben chimes have words? They have lyrics.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do. It's
it's half past two. It's quarter to nine.
No, it's all through this hour, Lord be my guide, and by thy power no foot shall slide.
Hang on, but it doesn't say that. I've never heard those words broadcasting to London.
Often performed. No, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Here's another one. Play up Pompey. The Portsmouth fans sing, play up Pompey, Pompey play up. Like that.
Oh, what really? Does
that mean? Same tune. Just play up as in play better.
So Pompey.
Oh, Pompey is a nickname for Portsmouth FC.
Got it.
Did you know that you can hear Big Ben chime before it chimes?
Oh, is that those future predicting people again?
No, it's not. Yeah. No, it's absolutely not.
Because that's an easy prediction. I feel like it's going to chime in about 5 seconds.
It's not, no. So the BBC, for anyone who doesn't know, the BBC broadcast the bongs live at 6 o'clock every day.
Yeah.
So they have a speaker installed inside the tower, and that has direct link to the BBC Broadcasting Centre. So if you have an FM radio, and you go and stand even really close to Big Ben, so like on Westminster Bridge, for example, and you listen to the FM radio, the FM radio signals are so much faster than sound waves in the air that the sound of the bong will go into the microphone all the way to the BBC and be broadcast all the way to your radio faster than it just coming through the air at you. So if you were standing on Westminster Bridge and you listened to an FM radio and Big Ben chimed, you would hear it on the radio a split second before you would actually hear it in your other ear.
That's really cool.
It's really cool.
Yeah. Well done, the radio. Doesn't get enough appreciation in the days of the internet.
It's so impressive.
Do you know on Wikipedia there's a big long list of leaning towers?
Is there?
So you can just see every leaning tower in the
world.
That's
good.
There's a nice one in Australia. This is called the Leaning Tower of Gingin. It's purposefully built to be leaning, and it's built at the Gravity Discovery Center, and they wanted to make it so that when you went to the Gravity Discovery Center that you could replicate by climbing the top Galileo's experiments on the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Yeah, so you could actually go up and you drop stuff down a chute.
So the idea with Galileo is that he supposedly, although we don't think this happens, dropped two balls from the Leaning Tower of Pisa, and they were different weights, but they landed at the same time, and that was proof that things will fall at the same rate, not dependent on the mass.
You know, buildings in Amsterdam tilt deliberately as well.
Do they?
And do you know where that is?
No.
So these are buildings in Amsterdam that face the canal. They're many hundreds of years old. And the reason they're built at a slight tilt is that they're tilting towards the canal. And that's so that they could winch goods up from the canal to the upper windows. And it's also so that if houses flooded, which they often did, then the first couple of floors might get full of water. And you need to evacuate your goods really quickly. And faster than carrying them all upstairs was if you just got them onto a platform outside the window and winched those goods up to a higher level. And the only way you can do that without breaking the windows on the way up and having it crash into the wall is to have the building lean so that you can pull the goods up directly.
Yeah, because if you go to Amsterdam, you see that a lot of the houses have got winches on the front of them, haven't they? At the very top,
really?
They got a little winch. Mm. And the reason was, I think this is right, I might be wrong, but I think they came up with a law that the amount of tax you paid was dependent on the front of your house, how wide that was. And so people wanted really, really thin houses so they paid less tax. And so they would be thin and long, and they would be tall as well. So that was fine, but then they needed to get, if you need to get a sofa up to the top floor, that's going to be really tough because you're going to have a really thin staircase going up there.
So
the way they did it was to winch it all up. And if you look now in Amsterdam, they have all these winches at the top of the houses.
This is so cool. I feel like our facts have just married each other, met and married. They also actually, in Amsterdam, they had to have a law preventing houses from being too tilted in the end because everyone was going, 45 degree angles.
Actually, it's a really thin house, but it's tilted 90 degrees down. There's a tilted structure in Yekaterinburg in Russia. It's a massive TV tower, and it is the tallest abandoned structure in the world.
Oh, really?
They started building it. They got it really, really high, and then the Soviet Union fell, and then they were like, okay, we're not going to do this anymore, and it's still there.
Unintentionally leaning?
Yeah, unintentional. It's very slightly leaning.
And did the Soviet Union fall because it itself was on...
Yeah. It was leaning too far to the left, yeah. My friend, who you all know, Marina, is from Yekaterinburg, and this is right near her house, and she says that everyone from there absolutely hates it and really wants it to get pulled down as soon as possible.
Right.
Wow. We'll just give it a nudge. Sounds like...
Yeah. One of the buildings that is on the list of the list of leaning towers on Wikipedia is this one that is a current story. It's a news story, the San Francisco Millennium Tower. Mm. So they're still trying to deal with it. It keeps leaning further and further because it's sinking into the ground. Okay. And it was found out, it was about 6 years ago they started noticing. It was a lady called Pamela Buttery who was up in her room, and she was on the 57th floor, and she was trying to play golf in her room. And every time she put the ball down, it just dribbled away from her towards the end of the room. And she had to go and collect it. And she's like, "Why? What's wrong with my floor?"
It is a bit annoying for Pamela Buttery, because presumably if she's got tilting floors, she's going to be slipping all over them all the time.
It's true. But yeah,
with
so whenever she falls over, she'll fall face down as well.
Okay, it is time for fact number three, and that is Jasinski.
My fact this week is that when aspirin tablets were first introduced, people were unsure how to take them, so one patient ended up strapping them to his head to cure a headache.
Did it work?
We actually have no reports on that. So I read this in an article in The Independent from 2005 by a journalist called David Randall, and I'd love to know more on it. So David, if you're listening, please get in touch. Mm. But this was a drug called Aspro, and this was devised in 1915, and it was called Aspro because the aspirin name was taken by Bayer. But it was the same as aspirin.
So aspirin it's like saying jacuzzi or Hoover. Technically,
yeah, but didn't Bayer lose the copyright lose the trademark to it because they literally let anyone use it and they never sued anyone?
I think they lost it in the Treaty of Versailles.
Yeah, really weird.
Yes. Well, actually, the interesting thing about Germans and aspirin is that it's... invention is put down to a guy called Felix Hoffmann, and if you look at Bayer's official history of aspirin, it still says that he invented it. And actually, it's pretty much widely accepted now since about 1999 that it was in fact created and tested by a guy called Arthur Eichengrun, and I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, and he tested it in 1899, and he wrote a paper in 1949 saying that he just told Hoffmann what to do. Hoffmann didn't even know what he was doing, but Eichengrun was Jewish, and so he wasn't ever included in the official narrative. And Hoffmann was this Aryan kind of guy, and it didn't come out until just over 10 years ago. And still, if you look it up, Hoffmann is the person who's mainly credited as inventing it.
I thought it was Hoffmann.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, by strapping your aspirin to your head, it might work still as a placebo.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I bet the person did feel better.
Yeah.
Is
it individual tablets or just the whole box?
Doesn't matter. You could, if you believed it was going to work, you could strap an empty box to your head and it would still work a little bit.
Yeah.
For me to believe it, I'd need the aspirin to be touching my skin. I'd have to take it out of the packaging, yeah.
Okay.
Otherwise, yeah, it's a placebo pharmacy, as you just stare at the product behind the counter and just visualize them going into you.
That'd be great. I've got a magic pharmacy. All these things work from a distance. You don't have to take any of them.
Yeah.
You get the placebo effect, and my business goes immediately out of business because I don't sell anything.
Yes.
You can charge them to look, and you can charge them more to look at branded aspirin than you charge them to look at unbranded.
Yeah. And that's true, because branded aspirin does better, doesn't it, than non-branded aspirin, because people believe that it's somehow more potent because it's got a brand attached to it.
It is insane that literally the same thing in Tesco costs 30p that also costs £3 or whatever, and people so often buy the £3, and Tesco even colours it so it looks like the Nurofen packets.
Oh, the packet.
And then it makes its aspirin red so it looks like branded aspirin packets.
But it actually does work. So you paying extra actually makes it work better. Yeah. There was a study by Braithwaite and Cooper in 1981 that showed that was true.
And I was thinking it's good that they don't make the tablets themselves silver, because imagine you're being attacked by a werewolf, you accidentally mistaken your aspirin tablets with your silver bullets that you're using to kill it. And then you end up just curing.
That's the problem, isn't it? But instead they've made them look like children's sweets.
Dan can't see the risk with that.
It's not nearly as dangerous as the werewolf situation. I think we can all agree.
Hey, I was reading in the new QI book, the fact book, there's a fact in there that I've been thinking about for weeks, which I just think it's so odd, and I can't believe that it's true. 95% of people on Earth have at least one thing wrong with them. So that's quite amazing, but flip that round. That means there are 5% of people on this planet with absolutely nothing wrong with them. How is that possible?
Yeah, I don't think it can be.
That is impossible, right? 5% of people are like, how are you? Absolutely fine. It's impossible.
Yeah.
But maybe they're just people who are extremely stoic. Mm-hmm. And so when they asked them in the survey, they said, you know, what's wrong with you? They're like, fine, I'm fine.
Just their organs hanging out. Collapse, can't move. Yeah. Fine, I'm fine. But yeah, anyway, so sorry, just to round up, apparently it was the first thing that was, it was the first medicine that was sold en masse in tablet form. And so it wasn't widely accepted, even though I think people have been swallowing things for hundreds of years. It wasn't widely accepted this would be the way to swallow it. And like I say, I couldn't find any more information on this poor man who strapped one to his head. So if anyone knows him, well, is descended from him.
He died of a headache immediately afterwards and so was never heard of again.
Aspirin is called a wonder drug by a lot of people because it's been very recently discovered that it does all these other incredible things. So a lot of people over a certain age or with blood clotting issues are told to take an aspirin a day because it stops platelets from clotting. And a third of
that sounds like a really crap version of an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Say it again.
An aspirin a day keeps the platelets from clotting. Yay. Does the trick. But a third of all people who are at risk from cardiac arrest or cardiac incident will not have that cardiac incident if they take an aspirin every day. Isn't that amazing? Wow.
Apparently, if your car is broken down,
it can't fix a car, Dan.
You just strap it to the top of the car.
Apparently, if you haven't got any jump leads on you and no one is passing by to help you and you happen to have some aspirin on you, if you put the aspirin, two tablets, into the battery itself, the basically the sulfuric acid within the battery will mix with the aspirin and it will kickstart it back into life. I read this in a Reader's Digest article. Yeah. I haven't tested it. I can't give first-hand
the
experience.
The dosage is the same for cars and humans. Take two tests. Yeah, two every 4 hours will keep your car running.
It does say drop two aspirin tablets.
Another thing it helps to get running is a collider, like not the Large Hadron Collider, but there is another collider in Illinois. There were like little switches they put aspirins on. And the idea is if there was a leak, the water would drop down, it would dissolve the aspirin, and then the switches would be able to switch back and it would turn off automatically.
Oh, so it's kind of like those old like resistors or trip switches, yeah, or something, when the metal is supposed to, basically it destroys the connection if the current's too
strong.
Yeah,
it's like
strong.
A fuse box kind of, yeah, thing.
Wow.
We're getting near the end of the year, and obviously New Year's Eve in America, there's huge traditions of dropping things in Manhattan. Sorry, in New York, Times Square. It's the what they drop the ball. There's a place in America called Myerstown in Pennsylvania where you can see a giant aspirin tablet dropped.
Can you?
Yeah, and that brings us into the new year. And the reason is because the Bayer healthcare plant is there, and so it's such a big part of the town and probably employs so many people who live there. So yeah, they just drop a giant
into a giant glass of water or
no, into a giant mouth.
Yeah.
Is it real aspirin? Like if I went and chipped some off, would that serve?
No, that would be so cool though, but no, it's it's fake. They do, it's really weird. There's a list you can go on of things that are dropped at New Year in America, and Pennsylvania has so many. So in certain places you can see a beaver dropped, a canal boat dropped, Indy car dropped. It's like a theme that each town has on their own.
Wow.
Yeah, but one is the aspirin. Yeah.
Poor old beaver.
It's a stuffed beaver. It's not a, yeah, it's not a real beaver.
Well, yeah, but still, poor old beaver who got killed and stuffed.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's true. It's in, and that's in Beavertown.
Is it?
In Pennsylvania.
Right. I don't think that's a coincidence. Yeah.
Think about the last time you had a cancel subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Okay, it is time for our final fact of the show, and that is my fact. My fact this week is that the first British plans to put a human on the moon was made by Oliver Cromwell's brother-in-law.
This is so cool.
So yeah. This is back in the 1600s.
Yeah, he wouldn't have really had the means to do so, I don't think.
No, he didn't at all. I mean, I think you're right. Yeah. This is Dr. John Wilkins. This is not in any way a nutcase of who just we happen to have found documents of some crazy machine that was built. This is a really respected clergyman, philosopher, author, helped found the Royal Society. He was a really big deal back in the day.
He's quite a famous polymath, I think.
Yeah, he was. And he was a big champion of sort of the latest ideas about space and one of the
what were the latest ideas about space in the 17th century?
Well, so I mean, I guess Galileo had telescopes trained at the moon, and he was very much he wrote two books about the moon and his thoughts about what actually was going on. He thought it was a solid object, and he got a lot wrong, but you always do in those, you know, when there's limited science and you're trying to break ground.
Although, to be clear, the moon is a solid object. That was one of the things he did not get wrong, right?
What?
So how did he try and get to the moon?
Okay, so his idea was that you could build a space chariot, and he was using obviously the technology of his time, and his theory was that as soon as you got 20 miles up into the air, magnetism of Earth and gravity loses itself. So that's why you can stay up there. The reason he thought that is because why do clouds stay in the air? And he thought as high as they were, that's where you no longer suffered to the pull of Earth's magnetism.
I mean, that's pretty good logic considering the information he had available at the time.
Yeah. So he thought if you could just get up to that point, then you'd be able to float off into space and go to the moon, and you would adjust to the air and you'd breathe the air of angels. This is where the kind of religious side comes in. But it made sense that that's how angels breathed. They just got used to it. And then you go to the moon and you would trade for spices and so on with the people who lived on the moon. He thought there were people that might live on the moon and we could trade with them.
And sorry, this very easy problem of getting the initial 20 miles up into the air, how was he surmounting that?
Well, okay, so...
Flying chariot.
Yeah, so the flying chariot. So it was meant to use clockwork gears. It was gunpowder. The idea was that it was going to be propelled using gunpowder.
And springs.
And springs, yeah.
the Acme space chariot.
But he was a very rational, sensible person. And in this age, that was actually kind of a perfectly reasonable thing to think. And his greatest interest was making a unifying language for the world, wasn't it?
So
he did lots of work on creating like what we have now, Esperanto, which obviously we all speak.
He also designed the system of a decimal system, which the metric system was then based on and built off. So, you know.
His language was quite interesting. Every time you added a new letter to a word, it would change the meaning, but your meaning would be related to the previous word. So the word D would be an element, but then when you put a B on the end, Deb, that would mean fire. And then Deba would mean a flame. So each one was related to the previous. And the whole idea of it was you would be able to see a word, and knowing the basic building blocks of how his language works, you could work out pretty much what it kind of meant. So if it began with D, you would know it was in this part of, you know, semantics. And if it began with X, you would know this. Or with J, you would know that.
That's clever.
So to a much smaller extent, you can do that with English, in that you know if something is, you know, it's got a diminutive on the front or a kind of like something, like it has been suffixes. But the core word is usually completely random or comes from a really random source, so you can't deduce it right from the beginning.
Sure. So I suppose if you hear a word that has hydro at the start of it, you know it's going to be something to do with water. Mm-hmm.
Didn't he also say that eating wouldn't be necessary when we got to space because there's no gravity, and the reason we have to eat on Earth is that the gravity pulls your food through your body and makes it fall out, so you have to keep eating more.
So wonderful. But he was genuinely, I mean, I have to say, when I saw this fact, I thought,
wait a minute. So there are some animals whose mouth and anus are on about the same level, like a dog, for instance, or a cat.
Yeah. Maybe he tried to train animals not to sit down, because as soon as they sit down, that suddenly gravity...
slides out. You're right. Dogs don't poo when they're standing up, do they? They kind of move their bum down.
Oh, my God.
Of course they do. It all makes sense.
Maybe he was right. But he didn't like all of this theoretical stuff. He worked out the distance to the moon to a degree of accuracy of 99.9% using just trigonometry.
That is incredible.
It's so impressive.
And I'm quite surprised that of the, you know, the British space program, that this guy, there's not a big statue of this guy outside.
We don't really have that much of a space program.
No, we have one that goes all the way back to the 17th century.
And it kind of ended there.
Yeah.
That's true.
We've done pretty much nothing. We have one, we have the Prospero satellite. We've got one British-made satellite that was launched with a British-made rocket. Everything else has basically been we've given something to someone.
Everything else is basically chariots. Yeah.
Okay, that's it. That's all of our facts. Thank you so much for listening. If you would like to get in contact with any of us about the things that we have said over the course of this podcast, we can all be found on our Twitter accounts. I'm on @Schreiberland, James
@ Eggshaped,
Alex
@ AlexBell_,
and Chazinski.
You can email podcast@qi.com.
Yep, you can go to our group podcast account, which is @QIPodcast, or you can go to our website, nosuchthingasafish.com. We've got all of our previous episodes up there. And you can also go to our other website, which is nosuchthingasthenews.com, that has all of our previous TV show episodes, which is just finished. It's not out anymore, and if you're missing it, that's where all the episodes are. Okay, we will be back again next week with another show. We'll see you then. Goodbye.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with Smart Card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.